Okay, sounds good. So let me just start the recording. Hang on one sec.
This call is being recorded.
Okay, we're recording. So Tom, would you please call the meeting to order?
Sure, I call the meeting to order.
Thanks. And just to have it on the recording, I'm going to go through a little roll call here. So Bridget?
Yes, I'm here.
Carrie?
Here.
Ellie?
Yep, I'm here.
Greg is not here today, I think. Holden?
Here.
Julia?
Here.
Rob?
Here.
Tom?
Here.
And Tim, I think, is joining, but is not quite on yet. And then this, oh, hello?
Hey, it's Tim. Sorry, I just kept on hitting a wrong key.
No worries. All right, we've got everybody who I think we expect to join today, and that's everyone but Greg. So thanks for joining. Tom already called the meeting to order. And just to introduce the folks who are not directors, this is Sarah Ward, Director of Operations. And I also wanted to introduce our new controller, Charlene. She's on as well. Hi, Charlene.
Hello.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, welcome to the team. She just joined in September, and we're very glad to have her on board. Okay, so we can go ahead and jump in. I think everybody hopefully has the agenda by email, which links to several attachments. Just let us know if you're having trouble accessing any of those as we go. Most of them are Google Docs, and then there are a few links to box files as well, including all the draft resolutions. So we can go ahead and get started. So the first agenda item is a state of GiveWell update. Ellie?
Thanks, Sarah. So and just overall, we're hoping to spend the first 90 minutes, or at least the first substantive part of the meeting, on GiveWell's progress, its plans, substantive questions, and focus on what we're doing, and leave the housekeeping until the end, till the last 30 minutes. So we thought it would make sense to just give a quick overview of where GiveWell stands, and I imagine people have seen the document that Sarah sent out, but I'll just walk through it very briefly. And the goal here is, you know, just to get in sync at a high level about where we're at, what we're doing, and why. So, you know, research, which is the work we do to identify our recommendations and publish information about them, and I think that's really in the best shape it's ever been in. There are certainly areas where we need to improve, but, you know, the team now is in a state that means it can produce, you know, higher quality research than it ever did before, and do more, to have a higher quantity of research than it's done before. And I think that's reflected in, you know, the work that you can see us publishing on an ongoing basis. And I really think one of the biggest drivers there have been Natalie and Josh, who are both senior research analysts, have both been on the team for a while. You know, they've really matured and learned and have just taken on a ton of the responsibility for doing and managing the day-to-day work of research. And then the team as a whole has also just, you know, continued to grow, and you know, overall it's I think in really great shape. So, you know, we have areas for improvement and some people we want to add, but, you know, overall research I think is really firing on all cylinders right now. You know, then there's operations, and, you know, operations has really been built up as a domain over the past 18 months from, you know, what had been, you know, previous to Sarah coming in, a pretty problematic situation. And you know, I put some of the brief history in the document, but, you know, we really did not, as I think many small young organizations do, we did not put a lot of focus on our business operations needs in our early years, you know, even, I guess, into our later years. And, you know, Sarah came in the middle of last year as director of operations. And, you know, mostly we're now at a point where we've, you know, filled many of the most crucial slots that we had to fill on the team, you know, Charlene being the most recent and certainly an incredibly crucial person to add. And, you know, I think now we're really in place to, try and make the team, you know, function as effectively as possible. And you know, I think that's really, you know, still there's a lot of room for improvement. You know, we're going to talk about some of those things in the call today, but you know, big improvement, but still, you know, big areas that need focus, you know, for the operations team. And then finally, there's you know, donor outreach, and you know, so this is trying to increase the amount of funding that we direct to our top charities. You know, historically, this has just not been a major priority for GiveWell. We've been really fortunate that donors have found us and given substantially, but you know, we've put very little proactive effort into outreach. And you know, now it's my, you know, one of my top priorities. It's a major organizational priority to try to significantly increase the amount of funding that we direct to those top charities. And you know, we'll be talking about this more later, but certainly at a high level, it's a big, you know, organizational shift where we're, you know, moving away from, you know, a you know, where we were in the past few years, you know, with a primary focus on research and, you know, trying to get buy-in operations, to I think research is in good shape, and you know, now, you know, Sarah's here to help us build out operations, and we're putting, you know, a lot of focus into getting the outreach right to grow our money moved as much as possible. And you know, Julia, you asked a question in the doc. I mean, just to answer the question, it's, you know, annual. Our goal, I'd say, is to, you know, increase our money moved by about, you know, $60 to $100 million annually. You know, so not just one time, but have those be recurring donations. And you know, we can talk more about this later. I think it'll be a big challenge, but that's the sort of goal that we have in mind to help GiveWell really reach a new level of impact. So I'll pause there. I don't know whether folks will have questions on this document, and we can move on. But certainly happy to hear any questions that people have about this update. Okay, great. So Sarah, what do you think? Should we move on to the next item?
Yeah, that sounds good to me, and that's the strategy update.
Great. So the you know, the goal with this document that I hope you've all had a chance to read. I know it's quite long, but you know, the goal is that I think we've really had some trouble keeping in sync, you know, we staff at GiveWell with the board about what we're doing and what our plans are and why, you know, what trade-offs we're making and how we plan to proceed. And so the goal with this document is to, you know, try to lay out that thinking in a more clear way so that, you know, you all can understand what we're doing and push back and we can get to a better place. You know, Tim was extremely helpful in getting this document together, you know, so Tim, you know, thank you for all your help on this. You know, in terms of the sorts of questions, you know, I know a bunch of people have already added questions to the document, which is great. You know, I think both substantive questions are you know, would be great, but also questions about the framework or the template, since, you know, I think in the absence of, you know, any other reason, we'd stick with this as our primary template going forward for, you know, keeping you all in sync about what we're doing. So happy to go through this document and answer questions that people posted. If you have additional questions, you know, just feel free to ask them verbally. As I go through, I'll probably just ask the person who posted the comment to read their question in case it leads them to give any more context on what they were thinking. So I think I'll just start going through that now, but you know, feel free to jump in and with any, you know, comments or questions as we go. So I'm just gonna scroll down the document and let people read their questions as we go. So Tim, do you wanna ask this first question you had about management? This is on, just for folks to see, this is on page 3 of the document.
So this is about your top priority, Ellie, and working with Natalie, Josh, Sarah, and Catherine on development. You know, point one there is coaching, assessment, mentorship, and training. Those are tough things to do. And so I was wondering if you feel like you have the tools necessary, however you want to define those, to do that well, or is investment required to equip you to do the training and mentorship required?
You know, so I think I think I have, you know, a lot of experience and the skills to do this, you know, to some extent, and I think to do it well. You know, I obviously have a lot of room for improvement and would be excited about practical steps I could take that would enable me to do this better. So, I mean, in terms of the, you know, the experience, you know, I think mostly it's, you know, I'm a person who's probably like managed, I don't know, like 40 or 50 people who've come through GiveWell over time and, you know, have thought a lot about, you know, what has gone well and what has gone poorly in, you know, in that experience and am drawing on that in what, you know, what I'm trying to do now. You know, I certainly think, you know, Natalie and Josh in particular are two good examples of, you know, where that's gone well. And I think the, you know, some of the most useful tools are just other folks that, you know, I can talk to when I have questions. And so, you know, primarily those people are, you know, people, you know, obviously Holden, but, you know, also like other folks who, you know, run organizations and have faced similar challenges, whether they're, you know, other nonprofits or, you know, talking to someone like Dustin at, you know, Asana about, you know, his experience running companies, which are definitely helpful. So, I mean, yeah, I think the short answer would be, you know, I think I'm well positioned to do it, though certainly would be excited about concrete opportunities to get better. Here on the next page, Tim, you have another question about performance feedback.
Yeah, this actually ties into the question about making sure is, you know, one way to read this feedback from the consultant is not just you, but as a whole, GiveWell could do better at coaching people. When you say we're going to get better at this, then, and again, this comes back to, this is a hard thing. Most companies are bad at it. How are we going to get better?
Yeah, I mean, so the concrete step we're taking, and I understand that what I'm about to say may not sound very compelling, but the concrete step is really focusing on it as a, you know, core issue that we need to improve on. You know, I feel like we have a pretty good sense of the, you know, where we're falling short. And so I think the main way in which we've fallen short is that we have just not communicated accurately and quickly enough with people about their performance, which has led to this, you know, confusion and uncertainty. And so the main step we're taking is first seeing this as a, you know, a primary goal that's worth the investment of time and energy to get right, and then concretely trying to improve on the key axes where we've struggled, you know, speed and accuracy, and then finally, you know, following it up over time via these same tools, you know, the surveys, the one-on-one check-ins, the skip level check-ins, and then, you know, outside consultants to see whether or not we've improved.
This is Bridget. I have a question, sort of sub-question of this. How much of the feedback that the consultant gave you and your overall desire to pursue these management questions, how much of that came out of the open still split? And as you kind of move further into solidifying a sole GiveWell identity, will some of that resolve on its own, or does it feel like it's a more systemic issue than that?
It's independent of the open fill split. So we actually ran this process a year ago as well, so like in mid-2016. So we ran it again in mid-2017. And I think we're going to, you know, need to take proactive steps to get better. I don't think it's just going to resolve independently because of the split. All right, so we're just continuing to scroll down here. So Tom, at the bottom of page 5, you know, you asked a question, and you know, so now I think we're moving a bit off of you know, sort of the management question and now on to, you know, a question about, you know, outreach and outreach strategy.
Yeah, my question actually had a little bit more to do with kind of overall strategy and how it relates to potential potentially either money moved. Well, just basically the amount of money moved by GiveWell. So you know, there was just a line in there about expectations of potential of expected donations from Good Ventures, and I'm just wondering, you know, given the menu of things that we're considering, you know, Holland in particular mentioned in his comments, he has an interest in the idea of influencing NGOs, which is in the strategy document, and there may be decisions about what research we want to invest in, which may in part be a function of do we have critical mass of money moved to be influential or effective in researching or connecting with that research with that intervention. Is there sort of a process of thinking about, you know, how do we allocate our expected money moved to what causes based on not only on in terms of effectiveness, but in terms of where can we have impact, and does that vary if we have twice as much, if we expect to move twice as much money or half as much money than we moved last year?
Got it, Tom. So I'm not sure I totally follow your question. So one question is, you know, should we be doing research to decide how to use funding to influence NGOs, or should we be trying to use the funding we have to influence NGOs more explicitly? I think another question is, and you know, another thing I'm hearing you say is, you know, depending on how much funding GiveWell can influence, does that have implications for, you know, where we decide to allocate it? Just on Holden's comment, I think what Holden was getting at was, you know, in the document, one of the outreach strategies that I laid out was trying to influence government aid agencies. So like the U.S. government's aid program, the U.K. government's aid program. This is very attractive because these groups have a significant amount of funding that they allocate. And I think one possible path to influencing those groups is doing research on the, you know, institutions that they give to or they primarily give through, and, you know, then being able to say to them, you know, here's the return you're getting by giving to UNICEF, Gavi, the Global Fund, and here is the return you could be getting if you were giving to some other, you know, other entity, you know, potentially a GiveWell top charity or something like it. And so that's where I was, you know, that's the where the suggestion in my mind of researching those larger NGOs was coming from.
And just to be clear on my comment, go ahead. No, go ahead. Never mind.
I would say, yeah, my question is, and I understand that, and that seems to be a GiveWell operations question, you know, that how much money you're going to operate to fund GiveWell within GiveWell's operating budget. I guess my question is, do expectations about money moved have implications for for interventions or for enterprises that we might want to fund because we're going to be, you know, it's going to be meaningful if we are at a certain level, but it's not going to be meaningful at a second level. I mean, does that, you know, by making some research, you know, by making research decisions right now, we're making kind of money move decisions as well. So, maybe the answer is no, but the question is, do expectations about money moved have implications for how we want to allocate our operational budget?
Yeah, I guess I don't see how they have a big impact on how we allocate our operational budget, you know, beyond the following. I mean, if I thought that independent of work we did on outreach, our money moved was going to grow fivefold, you know, I wouldn't want to be putting time and energy into outreach. Instead, I'd want to be putting it into research to make sure that we, you know, have those good opportunities to send that money to. On the other hand, you know, what I believe to be more likely to be the case, that our money moved will probably grow, you know, it will probably continue to grow, though somewhat slowly, you know, without additional proactive effort. You know, I think that and the amount of room for more funding that our top charities have, you know, now significantly surpasses the amount of funding that we can influence. So, you know, we expect, you know, to move roughly $100 million total this year. And, you know, our total room for more funding, excluding Give Directly, is around $250 million. And so with that in mind, you know, we see outreach as like a sort of major institutional priority because that gap is so large.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, yeah. That answers the question. The answer is no. So that's fine. I just wanted to be clear on that. I wasn't sure if that, you know, if a major change in expectations had a bearing on the actual research, the actual strategy in terms of deciding where to allocate research dollars, and the answer is no.
Yeah. Great.
Yeah. Got it.
This is Rob here. Just a quick follow up. Are we going to talk today in any substantive way about strategy for outreach, or is it, since I saw on the agenda that's something in development? Is that a conversation for a future board meeting?
So the next topic is an update on the outreach work we're doing and what we're thinking. So yes, we'll definitely talk about that.
Okay. Okay.
Great. So, Julia, you're the next question up here, and this might have been a previous question, but could you just, if you still are interested in the answer, could you ask your question?
So, what about other staff time and how much is spent on what?
Yeah.
I'm not remembering what I was thinking on August 18th, but.
So let me just try to quickly give like some information that just might help get at this a bit, which is, you know, the research team is 11 people excluding me, and you know I'd say that you know that team is you know managed and sort of led on a day-to-day basis by Josh and Natalie. And then I'd say, like, very roughly speaking, you know, maybe a third of that capacity goes into, I'd say something like a third goes into what I'd just bucket as sort of like standard top charity work. And so that would mean groups that we've recommended in the past, you know, following them, staying up to date on them, but also new groups that are really work well within the framework. So just a good example of this is Helen Keller International has a vitamin A supplementation program, sort of a standard global health program to reduce child mortality that has a lot of evidence behind it. We're reviewing them, and they're a possible top charity at the end of this year. That fits very well within like the standard historical GiveWell framework of evaluation. So that sort of investigation, but also following the top charities is about a third. Another third is on, you know, roughly like intervention oriented work. So this could be, you know, continuing to ask questions about the evidence base or the cost effectiveness of deworming or malaria control, or, you know, trying to look into newer areas like tobacco taxation and just understand, you know, how promising these areas seem for GiveWell to move into. And that's like roughly another third of the work we do. You know, we think that sort of work is very important, since the major differences between the organizations we recommend come from intervention-oriented factors rather than, you know, organization-specific factors. And, you know, happy to go more into that if anyone's interested. And then the final third is I'd say, is more in the sort of experimental, newer space. You know, this is what we call our incubation grants program. And so that work, you know, is trying to support the development of future top charities, you know, that includes, you know, giving some funds to groups that, you know, have tried to get off the ground to run programs. So an example of that is a group called New Incentives, which is running a cash transfer program to increase immunizations in Nigeria, but also partnerships with a research group called ID Insight, other programs at Evidence Action, which, you know, is the parent of Deworm the World, one of our top charities. And then, you know, also just trying to be out there and find new promising opportunities that, you know, could be entities we want to recommend down the line. So, you know, basically the research work pretty much falls into those three buckets. I'm just going to sort of keep scrolling down. You know, we're continuing to go through this document, just take questions. And obviously, like, as if you have questions, you know, separate verbally, you know, feel free to throw them out there. Tim, there's a couple questions you asked that, you know, I answered in comments, you know, when we put these together. Do you want to ask either of these again, or you think these are okay as they stand?
I think they're okay as they stand.
Okay. Holden, do you want to say anything more about your comment on the bottom of page 8 here? You just wanted to throw that comment out there on the document.
I need to look at the comment 1 second. Could also use this one?
Yeah.
No, I don't want to add anything to that.
All right, so we're continuing to go down. So, you know, one of the possibilities that I raised, and Holden, this is another comment you made, is just, I think there was this time at GiveWell where a lot of the way in which people found us and, you know, the way that other media linked to us was as this place to go for more thoughts on, you know, how to think about giving. And, you know, that was largely driven by, you know, Holden writing blog posts. You know, Holden's not a GiveWell staffer anymore. He's not writing for the GiveWell blog. And I thought, you know, one possible path is us trying to do more of that. And I think, Holden, you didn't think that was quite as likely, but interested if you want to share any more thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't do much of that. I mean, I do less of that for Open Fill than I did for Open Fill initially. So, I mean, it's just kind of, to me, there's a low-hanging fruit dynamic. There's a certain amount to say. And, you know, it's not like there's nothing left to say, but the effort to value ratio has gone up, and the opportunity cost of my time has gone up, and the opportunity cost of Ellie's time has gone up. So, yeah, I don't think it's as simple as, like, Holden's not here, that's why we're not doing this. I think it's, like, in general, like, the appeal of writing about philosophy of giving just kind of naturally goes down over time, and I think the appeal of, like, deepening the research and having more options and doing more outreach goes up over time. So I'm not saying you shouldn't do it. I'm just saying I was just trying to give a little bit more of a model of that.
Yeah. Cool.
This is Rob here. Can I ask a quick question about this? I take Holden's point about the increasing the amount of space and time needed to express something as you get deeper into the work. The question on my mind is why a blog post on the GiveWell or OpenFill site is the only imaginable venue for this. Why not republish or publish new stuff on, I don't know what the interesting spots are these days, Quartz or Vox or Reddit or something. I mean, someone has to tell me where the right places are, but places that syndicate content, but you know, without any editorial intervention, or at least much editorial intervention.
Yeah, so I think those are certainly like very plausible possibilities, and I would not say that the only medium to use is the GiveWell blog. I mean, I think reposting or even just repackaging in a way that, you know, reaches people where they need it and when they need it is definitely like a plausible path to take some of the, you know, work that we already put together as GiveWell blog posts.
I'd love to see experiments with that, to see if anything you did drove traffic and to the extent you can measure it, donations.
Yep, definitely. All right, so we're just going to keep scrolling down here. Tim and Holden, I'm going to skip the things that you just commented on unless you have major questions about them. All right, well, we've reached the bottom of the document. So did anyone, so this is, you know, the goal of the, you know, again, the goal of this document was to say, you know, here's what we're doing, here are the key things we're focused on, here are questions you know, we're asking ourselves, how we're trying to decide what to do going forward. So, you know, just want to open the floor up now for two types of questions, you know, either any additional comments, questions, you know, reflections people have on the document, the actual plans that we're undertaking. You know, we're going to talk in a little greater depth about outreach next if anyone's, interested in it. And then separately, you know, just this as a template. You know, this is, you know, I think your expectation should be that these are the questions, this is the basic document you're going to see in the future. So if there are, you know, changes you'd like to see us make, you know, let me know, please.
Ellie, this is Tim. One piece here that we sort of skip through that I would like to return to has to do with, you know, the conversation about where to focus efforts and increasing money move that I'd be interested in hearing you discuss a little bit more. So I have this comment here, and I can't tell what pages are which, but you know, historically, as we've tried to influence large donors, those donors we've influenced have recognized the value of GiveWell and have participated in funding GiveWell. It's at least plausible to me that as a strategy of moving money, if we pursued more of these institutional organizations, they would in fact be far more likely to be free riders. And so we could increase money, but at the expense of adding donors who may not give as much, but would not be as supportive of GiveWell's continued growth. Any thoughts?
Yeah, so I think you're asking, you know, what happens if we raise a lot of money from donors who give to our recommendations but don't support our operations. Is that right?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not too worried about that. I think that, you know, we have a lot of donors who I think really value our work and trust our advice. And what I think that means is that, you know, if we, and just to get some sense of the magnitudes, you know, our operating budget, you know, the last board approved operating budget is around $4 million a year, and our, you know, annual money moved is you know, even excluding Good Ventures is $40 million a year. And so, you know, we just have a lot of room to go to folks and say, you know, here's what we're doing, here's the research we're doing, and in, you know, the world you're describing, here are all these donors who are giving a ton based on our recommendations. Like, we need additional support. And I think it'll be easy for us to find that sort of support in, you know, in that world.
Even if it's not from the consumers or the research. Good.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
All right, so I guess give it like 5 more seconds. If anyone has any other questions, speak now, or we can move on to the next item. Great. All right, so let's move on to the next item on the agenda here. Okay, so this is item C. If you're looking at the agenda, this is the outreach update. So, you know, as we've now discussed a couple of times, outreach is a major goal. And what we mean by outreach, what I mean by outreach, is increasing the amount of funding that goes to our top charities. You know, to give some sense of what we're hoping to do, you know, that the goal is that, you know, within 5 years we've raise an additional $60 to $100 million in annual giving to our top charities. That excludes, you know, any change from Good Ventures. I'm just going to walk through this document, and then, you know, happy to talk to people and hear what you think. So I think like the key fact is that 80%, excluding Good Ventures, 80% of the money we move comes from the 2% of donors who give $10,000 or more. So, you know, for us to, you know, really move the needle, you know, we need to increase donations from, you know, those sorts of people. You know, people who are able to give enough, who are taking the time to give that amount, and I think that has implications for, you know, what our outreach strategy is. And you know, right now our focus is, you know, really trying to try out a few different things that seem like they may be promising, to then decide, you know, whether and where to invest further. And so, you know, what this document aims to do is to go through the buckets of work that, you know, we've done some on, but also other things that we're thinking about, just to give a sense of where things, you know, currently stand as of, you know, October. And this is really very much a work in progress. And so, you know, there's very little here that is going to be in the form of, you know, we figured this out and this is what our plan is. You know, instead, you know, we have, you know, planned activities and experiments for the next few months. And I think we'll know a lot more, you know, by the end of January about, you know, what direction, you know, we want to go from here. And I say the end of January because I think you all know that December tends to be the period where people give so much to, you know, charity and they're really paying more attention. And so a lot of the efforts that we're making are, you know, are tied to getting things in better shape for the end of the year. So I'm just going to like touch on a few of these categories at a high level. I'm not going to read through everything in this document and then, you know, just open it up for questions. So the, I think like, you know, category one is trying to, you know, increase and improve GiveWell's prominence in the media or with, I don't know what to call them, you know, quote, influencers or public intellectuals. You know, so this is, you know, articles in the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal, you know, people like Peter Singer, Nick Kristof, you know, they really have been, this has been the channel, the, you know, the cause of, you know, a huge portion of people who have found our research historically. And so, you know, if we're able to, you know, get more of this coverage, you know, that would really be great. Me and Catherine, you know, who's the outreach associate at GiveWell that, that I've been working with on this, you know, just to think more about, you know, what we can do with media. You know, and so Rob, you know, some of the ideas that you mentioned are things that we've been, you know, we've been playing around with, you know, what are the types of pieces we can, you know, sort of repurpose for publications, but also just thinking more critically about, you know, what sorts of information we can send to specific reporters that we know that, you know, might lead them to want to write about us. So that's one bucket. And, you know, I think I'll just kind of go through a couple of the big ones here and then we can, you know, circle back and talk through them. You know, another big bucket is what's called like digital marketing. And so that's basically, you know, using our website as the tool for capturing and converting people to be donors. You know, I really think the this is, you know, seems again like this is probably the second biggest driver of our success historically. You know, my guess is we have the thing we could do best here is some combination of, you know, better tracking of large donors, you know, who come to our site to try to get at, you know, our conversion rate. And so what I mean by that is, you know, right now, if you imagine someone who's part of our potentially addressable market, and they come and land on our site, you know, we have no idea whether we're converting 10% of those people or 90% of those people to be donors. And I, you know, there are things that we can do, which I'm happy to talk about, you know, to get, you know, better at tracking that figure. And then separately, I think, you know, both with that in mind, but even without it, you know, I think there are concrete steps we can take to improve conversion, you know, for, you know, of those donors. And so those, I think that's probably going to be the biggest area of focus. And, you know, right now we're working with a, you know, a consultant to help us, you know, build this out. And, you know, so far he's been really great. And I think we're making a lot of progress on this front. A third category is just, you know, what I called fundraising. And, you know, Bridget has been incredibly helpful in talking through this with me a few times. And, you know, I've also met with other nonprofit CEOs and fundraisers. You know, I'd say this is basically just, you know, nonprofits have a standard approach they take to raise money. You know, we have not really taken that approach, but I think there's a lot there that is totally consistent with our brand and is just, you know, best practices for staying in communication with people who demonstrate an interest in your work and allocating the time that you have to the people who seem like the most promising leads. And so this is, you know, a sort of a third big area that we haven't, you know, we haven't really invested in any significant way yet, but I think it's very likely to be an area that, you know, we put more time into, you know, going forward. And then there's some other, you know, some other ideas in here. I mean, the last one I just want to mention explicitly is this outreach to government aid agencies, you know, groups like the U.S. government and the U.K. government, but also others. And, you know, they have so much money to give, and I really think they, no one believes that they allocate it as effectively as possible. And so, you know, if it's definitely outside the scope of GiveWell's core expertise and core activities to date, but, you know, if we can find ways to influence them to allocate their money more effectively, you know, I think that does seem like one of the more likely paths to growing our money mood by a, you know, a very substantial amount. And, you know, most of what we've done to date is, you know, just be opportunistic and try to build relationships and have conversations to find out whether there are avenues in at these aid agencies. And I think there, you know, have been some, but, you know, it's all very early stage, but it's something that I suspect is going to, you know, remain in our minds going forward, be, you know, because it has the potential to be so, you know, such a big deal. So let me pause there, you know, and just kind of open things up to any questions that folks have.
This is Rob here. I've got two, I guess they're more ideas or suggestions than questions, but a couple thoughts on the outreach stuff. So first, I think you guys know that my colleague at the Sanford Center on Philanthropy and Civil Society, Paul Brest, who used to be the head of the Hewlett Foundation, is doing a research project called the Effective Philanthropy Lab, and he's partnered with Jeff Rakes, the former head of the Gates Foundation at the Rakes Family Foundation, to put together a set of Creative Commons licensed materials on how effectively to reach out to and to communicate with high net worth donors. And I mean, that stuff is all, there's a whole typology of different types of high net worth donors, and I'm sure, well, I could certainly connect you with Paul or the project manager lead for that particular project to share those materials with you. I think that they might be useful insofar as the focus of the staff at GetWell dedicated to outreach and wants to optimize its time around the 2% of folks who are likely to give $10,000 or more a year to GetWell. So you've got a potential set of materials or resources there that I think would be useful. Have you been, just out of curiosity, in contact at any point with Paul or Jeff Rakes about some of this work?
Not about this work. But so, I mean, you know, Rob, just any, if you could send over some more information, that would be great. And then, you know, we can just take it from there.
Sure. Okay. Second thought is that I wonder if another bullet point or bucket here of the four that you've got, the sort of public intellectuals, digital marketing, fundraising, would be to try to work with wealth managers and or people who help administer donor-advised funds. And the thought behind this is that as more and more money flows into donor-advised funds, especially by people who are having atypical liquidity events, there's increasingly some desire to shove some money out the door to a charity rather than just to shove it all into a donor-advised fund and to forget about it for a couple of years. And if you can manage to get yourself into part of the, you know, the basic set of materials that either a wealth manager or a donor-advised fund administrator puts in front of someone like that, here is a really high confidence, you know, highly researched set of giving opportunities that you ought to feel proud about. And then take 5 years to figure out what your giving strategy is going to be. It seems to me that donor-advised funds ought to be at least on your list of things to try to connect with.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think those are both, you know, possible paths. Let me just tell you a bit about, you know, why I haven't included them, though I certainly think it, you know, maybe we should, you know, include them in some way in the future. So, you know, there's wealth managers to start. I mean, the sort of consistent experience I've had with wealth managers, including like a few conversations, you know, as part of this process, you know, late last year. And these were with, you know, a couple people who were already friendly to GiveWell. So one was a, you know, close friend of Tom's, and another was a, you know, GiveWell donor who works at a wealth management firm in the Bay Area. You know, in just talk to them. And in both cases, it, you know, I think both of them really wanted to find a way to be helpful to GiveWell, but couldn't picture, you know, what they could do for their clients with GiveWell that would actually be productive. And I guess like some of the experience I have is of wealth managers as, and there's like a lot of different types depending on like the wealth that the people have, but, you know, as you know, being like more like, you know, gatekeepers to, you know, their clients and not being very excited or being like a very, you know, uphill battle to get them to take things out to their clients. And so I think, and then on the other side of the coin, you know, I feel like we have a lot of opportunity to, you know, kind of directly connect with individuals who would otherwise be working with wealth managers, you know, via the network of donors that we have. So I think just on the wealth manager front, I mean, I think The big holdup for me there is I guess I'm ultimately skeptical that the volume that we get is worth the, you know, is going to outweigh the cost of trying to push through the wealth manager gatekeeper as opposed to just, you know, going to the individuals themselves. Now, that's obviously very different than a donor-advised fund. You know, once you start talking about the Vanguard donor-advised fund or Fidelity, Schwab, et cetera, you know, you're talking about huge numbers of donors. And I think then the real challenge is just figuring out, you know, what pitch we can make that, you know, is going to actively move them to, you know, include us in some meaningful way. And this is something that we just, you know, haven't tried to do recently, though, you know, did try it like many years ago, you know, with Tom's help, you know, 2008, 2009. And I think like the main question that we need to come up with a better answer to is, you know, what are we offering them that's consistent with, you know, their goals for, you know, Vanguard, that's, you know, going to lead them to want to put us in front of their clients.
Yeah. Well, I would think that, you know, one of the simple ways to answer that question is the basic value proposition of GiveWell itself, really high confidence, extraordinary giving opportunities with lots of research behind it, so that they can convey to their clients something that you know, if they were to give this year, they would feel high confidence in getting a big return on their charitable donation, or, you know, something of that nature. You know, short of that, one more thought about the wealth managers. I haven't had anything like the conversations you've had, so I'm not going to have any way to contest or to give an alternative viewpoint. Although, in conversations with Paul and Jeff Rakes about the work that they're doing, one other potential resource which you, in theory, could offer, and here I'm directing this comment at least as much to Carrie as to you, Ellie, that... you know, occasionally one of the things that a wealth manager can offer a client is an opportunity to talk with someone who, you know, is a couple years down the road from the point at which the client comes in the door. And if Dustin or Carrie were willing for extremely promising high net worth donors to have a personal conversation to explain something about, you know, their own giving journey and how they got connected to GiveWell / Open Philanthropy. That's a resource which seems to me at least worth a conversation to consider deploying, of course, assuming that Destin and Carrie and anyone else were willing to do so.
I'm definitely willing to do so and have offered that some wealth managers that I know, and haven't gotten a lot of take-up, so... that's been my personal experience, but to the extent that, you know, Ellie wanted to offer me in that context, I'd be happy to be offered.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I think one of the ways, you know, Carrie, you know, you've been most helpful in a way in which I think we will continue to, you know, ask for your help going forward is when we, and I think one of the things that happens a lot with GiveWell is we get a lot of like inbound interest from folks. And so, you know, we just get that sort of inbound interest because we have the, you know, enough of a profile that people will like reach out to us in some way when they're interested. And, you know, those are the types of people where, you know, Carrie's support is very helpful in, you know, just giving the social proof that, you know, like some people of like in similar situations are, you know, leaning on GiveWell for, you know, for support.
I think one of the challenges of the donor advised fund is that we're, you know, since we're a niche product, I think one of the challenges is them like being like, I don't want to blast this to all my clients. I know most of my clients won't be interested. So, you know, we have gotten, I mean, I can remember at least one major referral we got from a donor advised fund where, you know, they were very excited to put us in touch because it was clear to the advisors that the donors were looking for someone like us. But most of the time it's not clear to them. So that's what I think is challenging there, that I think, you know, sure, the value proposition is great for people who are interested in it, but if only 1% to 10% of people are interested in it, then I think it's hard for the fund manager or the advisor, whoever it is, to figure out who, you know, who they want
yep.
to put us in front of.
That's true, although, I mean, I'd say if the last time you gave us any, you know, a big effort was 10 years ago or whatever you said, 2008, that one of the things that's changed in the past 24 months by John Weiss Fund is the you know, greater amount of critical attention being placed on them as nothing more than warehouses for charitable wealth, and as the fund administrators themselves are facing some pressure to ensure that each individual fund at least distributes something every year the other kind of thought that I have is that you could pitch yourself to the fund administrators for, you know, for those funds that haven't made any distributions in 2 or 3 years, especially those with a lot of money in them. Maybe GiveWell is a good opportunity because it's a time-tested, high confidence distribution, and that would be the pitch.
Try.
Yeah, and I think this is something that we could try, and I think it's appropriate to try, though I think the like response you should expect is that, you know, GiveWell just covers this small number of, you know, particularly focused organizations. And, you know, I think what from the perspective of the person who's saying, like, should I put this in front of my donors or, you know, front of my community, you know, GiveWell's narrowness, I think, is a big turnoff to them.
I agree.
Well, I'm sorry. The one last thought. I wasn't thinking that any fund administrator would send out an email blast with GiveWell in it to every single person who'd opened up a fund, but rather, in particular, for people who have just opened an account and stuffed a ton of money in it because of a liquidity event. Or for the person with a donor advised fund with a ton of money in it who hasn't made a distribution in 2 or 3 years, that relatively small number of funds would be a good target for you guys.
Yeah, I mean, I think this influences how I think about outreach as a whole, this principle. But I think that while in some ways GiveWell is very like well vetted and reliable in certain ways, I think it's also like it's always going to be edgy to do international giving. And it's always going to be safe. Like if you're the person who's just like, I've got money sitting around, I got to give it somewhere, I want to give it somewhere unobjectionable, it's always going to be more safe and unobjectionable to give it to, like, I don't know, American Cancer Society or your alma mater. So, a general assumption that I approach these things with is like, you know, GiveWell doesn't actually perform very well. I've never seen GiveWell raise serious money and don't expect it really to, in the context of like, you know, let's do something really safe and unobjectionable. I've seen it more from people who really prize rigor. But it could be worth a shot. I just think it's worth, I mean, as we discuss marketing strategies, I think it's worth being on the same page about some of the background assumptions we're carrying in. And one of mine is that, you know, the product is kind of niche and kind of edgy, even as it is rigorous.
So maybe related to that topic, if I could jump in, I think one of the issues here that potentially may offer some leverage is thinking about, and we talked for a few years ago a fair amount about sort of dumbing down the research or creating a more popularized version of it. And I think that, if you want to take what GiveWell does and be true to what it does, but at the same time present it in a way that's going to have some currency with an audience, you know, even if it's not the perfect audience. If you're sort of generally targeting it at a, you can sort of craft this and put a narrative around it and get a potentially wider audience than you would have just referring people to the website. And I think that may be something that I'm sure that that's something that most PR firms are not really equipped to do. They're not really equipped to sort of repackage what you guys do and show it to the media. So I think that probably could be done. I'm not sure exactly what resources would be best equipped to do that for you. I mean, whether it's talking to authors who are writing in the publications where you want to be presented and talk about, all right, you know, here's what we're trying to say. Is there a way to tie it to current events? Is there a way to tie it to sort of current themes in the zeitgeist? You know, how do we do that? I think there's, maybe that's too much work, maybe it's not worth it, but I think it could be done, and it could be something that could potentially enable you to reach a wider audience and potentially, you know, basically capture sort of a wider, just do better sort of at the top of the marketing funnel, if you want to use the marketing lingo on it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot we can do to make our research like more appealing and more understandable to a general audience. Like I still think that a crucial and probably the crucial thing about GiveWell is, you know, the process rather than the like outcome. And I think the people who most value that are going to be people who are, you know, thinking more analytically, more, you know, just stepping back away from the like quick question of where do I give and thinking more about how to do that in the best way possible. And I do think, like, ultimately, you know, those are the sorts of people who likely have more to give. But it's also like a, and so I think that's why we can be successful. But I do think that sort of case is going to end up being more difficult to make, you know, in the way that you're thinking, Tom.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think it'd be difficult, but I don't think it's impossible. I mean, I think it warrants some additional thought about how do you write a catchy story about GiveWell? You know, how do you do something that it would appear that you could, you know, do a 1,000-word essay in Wired that would still convey the essence of GiveWell and not compromise, you know, either the principles or the approach.
I mean, Vox has tried to do that, right?
Yeah, this whole category is like part of like our media approach. You know, how does GiveWell appear in the publications and the areas that we want to? And I think this, the 1,000 word story on GiveWell is something we've had a bunch of. And I think the challenge is keeping those going as, you know, you can no longer tell the story about the new group GiveWell that started up and is trying to do great research on charity.
So I actually think this goes a little bit back to what Tim was saying earlier. You know, can you potentially think about some of those, you know, sort of more philosophical or more elements of the principles of philanthropy stories and put a current spin on them, you know, talk about what's the role of philanthropy in a politically polarized world. You know, maybe that turns into an essay that somebody wants to publish. Maybe it's an Atlantic essay or something like that. And maybe you guys write it as opposed to just getting coverage on it.
Yeah, so to be clear, I mean, this is exactly the sort of thing we're thinking about, and I think a challenge is that, you know, this is an area where, like, we're actively thinking about, you know, what do we have that we can offer publications, whether it's them writing it or us, that will get us in front of the people we want to get in front of. And I think this is a particular domain where it has been quite difficult to find, you know, outside help that is really enabling us to do more than we're able to do on our own by just thinking through this question ourselves.
Ellie, what is the gating factor, the primary gating factor on the number of outreach experiments that you're running?
The primary one is my time, and then the secondary one is just how much funding it seems like reasonable to invest given how little we know right now about like what will work. And just in terms of investment, I shouldn't have just focused on money. So, you know, if I had more time, I think the next thing I would do is try to build out our, you know, what I classified as like our sort of fundraising operation, where I think like the biggest thing would be, you know, working to capture more leads, better, you know, so that would be like some level of donor interest, that are qualifying those leads to figure out who we should spend more time on, and then figuring out, you know, what sorts of people we need to hire to follow up with them. And so that, you know, requires more time than I have right now to move forward on, but it's next up. You know, then would definitely need some, you know, budget to make those, you know, additional decisions. And then, you know, the cost of making, you know, full-time hires, you know, goes into the future, because it's a fairly you know, fairly significant expense to kind of bring on, you know, because someone's going to be around for a while. And so, you know, all of that, I think right now is those are the main limitations.
I guess the question behind that too was, how much are those limitations going to decline over time? And I think you sort of answered that question as well.
Yeah.
Been some of the other questions.
I mean, I think it's, you know, how's it going to change? I mean, I think I hope that with additional information about, you know, what's working, we're in a better position where I think the risk reward will imply that we should move forward more intensively with, you know, some of the things that we're trying. And, you know, I also think we're going to move through some of them. And, you know, so I've been focused on, you know, some of these priorities, and then in the future we'll have time to focus on others. And so I definitely think you'll continue to see that, you know, that cycle of, you know, try things out, you know, push new things and then see how it goes. And then hopefully we'll get to a point where, you know, we want to build something, you know, after we've figured out what seems like it's going to work best.
My operating mental model here is that almost everything in this space has sharply diminishing returns and won't scale. And so I would be thinking about this in terms of, we're going to try a bunch of things, some of them will succeed and work, and then we're going to need to try a bunch of new things, because that thing that worked for then is not actually going to then scale up if we keep doing it.
Sure. Yeah, that may be the case.
Tim, I don't know that I necessarily disagree. I feel like as I necessarily agree. I may more disagree. I feel like as we're talking, I hear a lot of different ideas, and that what I keep coming back to is that Ellie had mentioned sort of some best practices in terms of fundraising, but also in terms of previously with communications, and it just kind of requires some staff on the ground actually doing the work, that there's not going to be some idea that in the moment may get a huge return and then over time it will trail off, but that instead it might take a long-term investment. I guess as I listen to our conversation, I am more and more aware of the fact that I don't have expertise in communications, and I feel like, you know, Rob, I think it was Rob mentioned, who is it that what other places could we publish a blog post? And there are professionals, communications professionals, that would come out there and say, like, oh, it needs to be BuzzFeed, it needs to be Huffington Post, it needs to be, I don't know what it is, that's the whole point, is I'm just a volunteer board member. And likewise for the donor advised funds that, I mean, I do work in fundraising, so I have more of a perspective on that, but I feel like someone who is more of a, who is a professional on the ground that knows how to execute, not just like the newest idea, but what has been working for decades. I guess what I'm saying is, maybe as a board member, for what we can do to help would be to say wherever it is helpful to actually invest in staff as opposed to maybe consultants. Maybe that's to actually professionalize these skill sets rather than having, you know, Ellie and Holden, who are obviously quite intelligent, but they're background wasn't research, but to have someone who comes in with 10 years of experience in external affairs or fundraising or PR, to have those folks who have the have the relationships and have the experience on the ground. That was a lot of words that summed up all these different feelings that I've been thinking listening through this.
Thanks, Bridget. This is Sarah. I'm just jumping in before Ellie or whomever responds to mention that I'd like to reserve 15 minutes for the budget discussion before we move on to other vote items, not to cut this discussion short, hopefully.
Yeah, great. So let's just, you know, cut this at 3:15 Pacific time if you know, we need to move on. And then if we can always come back to this or schedule another time to talk if people want. So just, you know, Bridget, on what you're saying, I mean, and Tim, I mean, the model I have in my head about how this is going to play out is we're going to experiment with things, and then if they're, let's say they're really great, I mean, let's say, you know, podcast advertising plus, you know, and you know, lead qualification via our website end up being these, you know, awesome ways of bringing more people in and getting them to give to our top charities, you know, we're not just going to keep investing in those, you know, on and on. Like, instead, those would just become, you know, ongoing components of our work. And, you know, this is a process we've been through a bunch of times, you know, in the, you can, I think about the GiveWell top charities research as probably the best example. You know, at first we had no idea what we were doing and had to put a ton of effort into figuring out how to make it work. And, you know, that's something that still takes some time, but, you know, we've built the team that does it and it goes well. And I think the same is true for, you know, on the operations side, the donations processing. You know, we took a while to figure out how to make all that work well and to thank donors at the right times and appropriately and communicate with them. But, you know, now we've built it and it just operates. And so I think the, you know, the real question we're trying to answer is, you know, what are the, you know, what is the growth and marketing department at GiveWell look like? What are the components that it should have? You know, what's it going to take to get us to the steady state in various domains? And that certainly will just be an ongoing process in the same way that, you know, our research itself, you know, has continued to evolve beyond the, you know, whatever, GiveWell Research 1.0.
That's me being happy to leave that there.
Yeah, great. So let's move on to then, you know, now that we're there, to the budget update. So we're not, you know, we don't have a revised budget that we need to vote on. At the last board meeting, the board approved a budget from, you know, July 1, 2017 through the end of June 2018. So that's the approved budget. There's a couple things we want to talk through, though. So, you know, topic one is just a quick update on what I'd say is the sort of state of the budget, you know, where we currently stand. Second is revisiting the question that we raised at the last meeting, you know, explicitly in following the open philanthropy split and the sale about whether or not our excess assets policy was triggered. You know, and the excess assets policy is where, you know, at a certain level of reserves, we'd restrict funding that GiveWell holds in an unrestricted way, you know, which could be used for operations or for charities that we want to grant them to. You know, and if we trigger that policy, we grant funds or we restrict funds to be granted to charities. And then finally, it was just a quick update, and I don't think we included it in the meeting information, but just a quick update on unbudgeted expenses that we've allocated funding to. You know, at the last meeting, we talked a bit about our policy for that, and we agreed that we would just update the board when we talked, so wanted to give a quick update on that. So just in, you know, in brief, you know, you know, Natalie and I reviewed an updated budget. You know, Charlene only came on a month ago, so Natalie is still the person who is, you know, owns the budget. But in the near future, that'll be passed, and Charlene is going to take over. You know, GiveWell is still in a solid financial position. You know, that incorporates the fact that we have reserves from the sale, but, you know, just also looking forward at our projected revenues and our projected expenses. You know, at least for now, we expect them to, you know, to be in line. The big challenges we face, I mean, first, it still takes us a long time to update the budget. You know, both Natalie and I put a lot of time into it. You know, we need to get to a point where it doesn't take as much of our energy to get an updated budget together. You know, that's a major priority. That's something that, you know, Charlene is here to help us achieve. But, you know, we decided in advance of this meeting with this, you know, kind of research deadline, the top charities update looming, to not go all the way to putting together a budget that we can share with the full board. Natalie and I did go over this budget, and, you know, we revised some of our expectations for what spending will be, you know, explicitly around, you know, potential outreach costs going forward. And with that in mind, we do not believe that we should designate any of the reserves we hold for regranting. You know, instead, we think we should hold them as you know, for possible spending on our operations. And I'm very happy to, you know, kind of talk through that and give more detail if people have questions. We are going to schedule a meeting with the finance committee, which is three of you, who are, you know, will, I think, vote to create this committee shortly, you know, just to sort of talk through it in greater detail. But, you know, it's at the level of a conversation that will work well with, I think, a few people, but probably not with, you know, all the full number of people who are, you know, on the board right now. So anyhow, that's the update. I can go through the sort of quick update on how we've spent money that you know was not previously approved by the board as part of the last budget, but want to pause and see if there are any thoughts or questions about the overview before I just kind of list off a few things we've spent money on so far.
Could you just tell us briefly, Ellie, what is the most time-consuming aspect of preparing the budget, if you can put it in 25 words or less?
25 words. I mean, it's a big Excel file, with a lot of different raw data sources from individual donors and projections about their giving, and then staff compensations and projections about changes in staff compensation and staff composition over the next 2 years. And so just getting that all nailed down and correct, takes a decent amount of time. To give you some context, we're not talking about, 100 hours, but, probably takes, legitimately, would take an additional, 10 hours from Natalie and me in advance of this meeting to get it in shape. And, that was 10 hours that we really didn't feel like we could spare right now.
Yeah, that sounds like it sucks.
Thanks. And then I should just remind you, at either last meeting or previous one, the board approved about $100,000 on podcast ads. So advertising on podcasts was something we ran a small experiment with in February. We sent out $20,000 on it, and then saw I think about that amount in donations, but a whole bunch of them were recurring. And so what that meant is that, we actually returned more to top charities than we spent on advertising. I don't think that, something in the range of a 1.5 to 2 to 1 ratio of dollars to top charities relative to dollars spent doesn't seem great. But it was, good enough and directly measured that we wanted to try it at larger scale during giving season. So we're going to be advertising on a bunch of the podcasts that, we understand our donor audience listens to, sort of data wonky, nerdy podcasts, in November and December as just a follow on to that experiment.
And I just added a link to that summary in the GiveWell budget update doc if anyone wants to, would prefer to look at the numbers rather than just listen.
So, any questions on this? I mean, I'd say at a high level, we're in good shape. We don't think we should grant out funds right now. Good shape financially. Don't think we should restrict funds now for granting. And then, we are working hard. It's a major priority to get the budgeting process in better shape, in the near future. And so that's a major priority for the operations team.
So there are resolutions for the board to vote on about the application of the excess assets policy. So before I ask for a vote on that or for someone to move to vote on that, any questions about that piece of this?
This is Rob here. I'm just looking at the resolution of the excess asset policy. Idea is that. Mm-hmm. Go ahead. Yeah.
I can summarize what the resolutions actually say. So, the resolution is for the board to decide that as of October 2017, we have no excess assets that should be earmarked for regranting. And we'll reconsider that at the next budget meeting, which will be next June.
Uh, I'm sorry to be daft about this. So what does it mean that we're deciding we have no excess assets? That means that we will have, GiveWell will have granted out the revenue generated from the OpenPhil transaction that would have been subject to the excess assets policy. Is that what that means?
Well, this is looking at a whole, like at our entire budget, our projected expenses and revenues. Including taking into account the money we received in the OpenPhil transaction and deciding that as of October, considering all of those things, looking ahead, we don't have any excess assets as that's defined in the excess assets policy, which is also linked in the agenda if you want to take a look at, and you know, at the actual language in the policy.
Right. So my recollection, admittedly imperfect perhaps, is that the OpenPhil transaction was likely to trigger the excess assets policy. So is my memory wrong about that, or has the money been granted out, whether or not it's independent of whether it came from the transaction itself?
Mm-hmm.
So,
what does it mean to resolve that we have no excess assets?
So the policy requires the board to apply it at least once a year, and so that's what we're doing. We're, you know, making sure that we fulfill that requirement of doing this once a year. We weren't sure if the revenues from the OpenPhil transaction would trigger the excess assets policy or not. We thought that they might, and so this process that Ellie and Natalie just went through was to try to figure out if, as of today, looking ahead at each of the next 12 months, including, you know, if you including taking that money into account, whether or not we have excess assets that should be earmarked for granting.
Got it. All right. Now I think I got it. Sorry for that.
Oh, yeah, no worries. Yeah. Any other questions?
Do you need someone to move that we vote on it?
Yes, unless there are other questions.
Can I just ask one quick question, and we can table this for later if you want, but just to Rob's analysis there, it makes it sound like in order to get within the range of what our operating costs would have been for the year, we needed the proceeds from the OpenPhil transaction, which makes it sound like the donations for operations were relatively meager. Again, this is a budget analysis. It's not relevant. It's not relevant to the specific issue, but it's something I think maybe we should address either now or later.
Sorry, I missed that.
So,
well, I didn't want to speak to this, but the excess assets policy. You know, we look at the next 12 months and decide if our projections show us having 12 months worth of unrestricted assets in each of the next 12 months. So it's a pretty, it's a specific kind of analysis that's quite conservative, but Ellie or anyone else, do you have anything to add to that?
Well, let me just explain. So I mean, the question, right, makes a lot of sense. Like, we got this infusion, otherwise unexpected infusion of cash from the sale of, or the transaction, and we're now saying we still don't feel like we have excess cash. So that must imply that excluding the sale, we wouldn't have had enough. So you know, that's the question. What's going on here is that the excess assets policy and like when we will decide to grant out funds is a conservative leaning policy, meaning we want to err on the side of holding funds rather than, you know, that we might not end up needing, rather than err on the side of granting out funds that we might then end up needing later. And so there's a couple of ways in which that conservatism comes through. But I also think that like the conservatism is definitely debatable. So the way that comes through is, first of all, you know, when we're projecting out our revenues, what we're using when we apply the excess assets policy is a conservative projection. And so that's primarily funds that, you know, though not only, primarily funds from donors that, or, donors who we know, who we then can say, like, here's the likelihood that this donor will give again at that amount. We also add in, like, some expectation for, you know, ongoing support from the, you know, all of the smaller donors who support our operations, and that builds out our conservative estimate of revenue. So I think that, you know, ends up being, you know, about $3 million a year, conservatively projected. Our best guess for how much funding we will actually bring in is around $5 million a year. Then on the sort of so in sort of like the best guess versus conservative, is, it makes a big difference on the you know revenue side. And then similarly on the expense side, the way I've approached this is I really want to project out expenses that I realistically think we might need, but I'm shooting for something that's closer to the 95th or maybe the 99th percentile of needs, of operating expense needs, you know, rather than the 50th percentile. And so what that means is that in both the revenue and the expense side, we're taking like a fairly conservative approach. The reason I think this makes sense is the goal with the excess assets policy is to prevent us from just building up like an unreasonable amount of reserves. So if someone comes in one day and says, here's $25 million GiveWell, like we're not allowed to like save that as our endowment. Instead we have to go through the process of thinking about like how we would most effectively use that money, and most likely at that level, like we would certainly grant the funds out. I think that the next step that I see here is the conversation with the finance committee, because I think there's like a lot of judgment calls we're making about how conservatively to project revenue and also what possible expenses we could have. And I think it's quite appropriate for the board to the board members to look closely at that and weigh in to see whether or not they agree with the decisions that we're making.
So my understanding of what, because I kind of asked Ellie a question like this like a few days ago, and I think my understanding of what happened. So one, it's just important to remember that excess assets includes a concept of forward expenses. So in other words, if you raise your estimate of how much you're going to spend, then your excess assets go down. And so I think what happened here was that we, there was a bit of a windfall. The open fill sale was not that huge, like $3 million or something. And the annual budget is what, like?
$4
million. $4 million, you're right. So it's not, it's not an incredibly huge windfall. And then at the same time, GiveWell is getting more ambitious about outreach. So basically, as this $3 million comes in, GiveWell is also looking to the future and thinking about all the different stuff it might do on outreach and all the different ways it might expand and thinking, we don't really, like, in a world where we spend a lot and take in a little, we actually need all this money. And again, like, because we're being conservative, that's what Ellie talked about. But basically, if you get a bunch of unexpected revenue, but then you also raise your expense estimate, then your excess assets, you won't have excess assets, the way we're calculating it.
I read this as actually what we asked to happen at the last board meeting.
Cool.
All right. If there aren't any other questions, then I just sent out all of the resolutions by email, by the way, in case a couple of people have had trouble accessing the documents on Box. So if you're having any trouble with that, they are in your email. And the first thing is this excess assets policy resolution. If anyone wants to move to vote on that.
Rob moves to vote on the resolution.
Do we have
Somebody
a second?
Needs a second. Tim seconds.
All right. I'm going to call out. Greg, are you on the phone? I think you may have joined.
Yeah, I'm on, and I vote yes.
Okay, thanks. Bridget?
Yes.
Carrie?
Yes.
Ellie?
Yes.
Holden?
Yes.
Julia?
Yes.
Rob?
Yes.
Tim?
Yes.
Tom?
Yes.
Great. Thanks, everybody. So anything else on the budget, Ellie, before we move to the next items?
Nothing else from me.
Or from anyone else? Okay, so the rest of these, we're going to try to walk through relatively quickly. I think the thing that may take a little longer is the conflicts of interest one, but let's just do one that I think will be quick first, which is item E, reviewing and approving the minutes from the June 6th board meeting. The draft minutes are linked in the agenda, and then I just sent them to you by email as well in case you have trouble accessing them on Box. So I wrote these up based on the recording and the conversation. They include the resolutions that the board approved at the meeting. And I hope you had a chance to review them, and we'll need, I guess, Tom to ask the board to review and approve them.
Okay, I ask that the board review and approve the minutes.
All right, and will you just, I guess, move to for a vote on the resolutions?
I'll move for a vote on the resolutions.
Okay, and do we have a second?
Second.
Sorry, who was that?
That's Julia.
Thanks. Okay, let's walk through. Bridget, do you approve?
Approve.
Carrie?
Approved.
Ellie?
Approved.
Greg?
Approved.
Holden?
Approved.
Julia?
Approved.
Rob?
Approved.
Tim?
Approved.
And then I don't know if the mover actually has to approve, but just in case, Tom?
Okay. Yeah, I approve.
Thanks. All right. So the next item is reviewing prior conflicts of interest and ratifying a couple of transactions. So this item comes out of, if you recall, the conflict of interest declarations that everyone filled out in the summer. So just as a reminder, we ask everybody, every director, to fill that form out once a year. But if you ever identify a potential conflict of interest during the course of the rest of the year, please raise it with me, and you can fill out that direct declaration ahead of time and send it to me, or I will ask you to fill it out after we talk about it. But anyway, so during that process, or the review process, we went through, we identified a couple of actual or at least apparent conflict of interest. I guess they are actuals. And the board needs to review those and consider whether they are fair and reasonable and in Gidwell's best interests. And that's what these resolutions are about. So I'll just walk through each of them to give you a little more information than you can see in the resolutions. And feel free to interrupt me if you have questions, and I'll also pause at the end for questions. We're going to ask some of you to step out because of the conflicts when we actually vote on the resolutions. But for now, everybody can stay for the initial discussion. So we only have 4 minutes left, but I'm hoping we can power through these last couple items.
And Sarah, can you start the recording again on the line?
Yeah, I will. Thank you.
This call is being recorded.
Okay, I'm emailing Julia. All right, so thanks everybody for going through those. Sorry that took a while and was a little more complicated than we perhaps had time for. Is that Julia?
It's Carrie.
Ah, hey Carrie. So I want to wait for Julia to get back on for the Finance Subcommittee one. What are feelings on going a little bit over here? Because to do both of these, we'll have to go over. We could save the board size one for either doing in writing or at the next meeting.
I'd rather not go over more than 5 minutes myself. I don't know if I'm needed for all these things.
Yeah.
I'm flexible for worth. This is Bridget. Okay.
Tim has to make a Halloween costume.
So, Sarah, why don't we do the one that we need to do and hold the second one for another time?
Yeah, okay, that sounds fine. I assume that's Julia?
Yeah, here's Julia.
Hey, Julia. Okay, so we're recording again, and we're going to move to the formation of the Finance Committee, and I think we're probably going to skip the last item on board size and come back to it either at the next meeting or in writing. So Finance Subcommittee, this came up because we realized that we wanted, like Ellie said, to send some of the information about the budget review and our recommendation on the excess assets policy to a group, and we realized we really didn't have a group designated for that kind of review. We have an audit subcommittee appointed, but not a finance subcommittee, and there are regulations in California and New York that apply to us that require those to be separate subcommittees with less than 50% overlapping members. And so we talked with a few people and asked them if they'd be willing to join another subcommittee in some cases, or the first in others. And we got a little advance agreement from Tim, Rob, and Julia to join this committee. And we also asked Tim if he would serve as the chair, which really comes with no special duties as of yet, but perhaps at a later date. So, yeah, Ellie, did you want to add anything to that? Does anyone have any questions?
That was great. No, nothing to add. Can I move to vote?
Sorry?
Can I move to vote?
Yeah.
Done.
I second.
Okay, and then everybody gets to vote on this one. So, Bridget?
I vote yes.
Carrie?
I vote yes.
Ellie?
Yes.
Holden?
Yes.
Julia?
Yeah.
Rob?
Yes.
Tim?
Yes.
Tom?
Yes.
Great. And thanks to all of the committee members, and especially Tim, for being on every single committee, for joining this one. Okay. So just so everyone knows, the last agenda item that I said we would follow up on, I'll do that. This relates to something that we discussed the last time around, and we promised to follow up on. So we will follow up on it. It's just making it a little easier for the board to adjust its size. So more to come on that one. But thanks for getting through a packed agenda today, for the most part.
Great. Thank you, Sarah. Thank you, everybody. Really appreciate your joining. And have a great evening.
And Tom,
thanks, everybody.
Tom, will you just adjourn, please?
Yeah, the meeting is adjourned.
All right.
Great. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks.
Thanks,
thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye-bye. Good night.